Choose life. Choose Kit.
Hello.
Choose Miles. Hello. Choose... Oh, nothing. Don't... Let's not do this. It's such a cliche.
What? So you mean all that running around Edinburgh we did was for nothing?
Hello and welcome to Not the Special Edition, episode 24. We're the internet's very own geeky podcast that thinks our listeners deserve to have a bucket of celebrations poured all over the microphone. Do it, do it! I'm Miles and I'm here with...
Kit.
I don't feel good about myself after doing that.
No, I don't know why that just happened. Let's move on.
Yay! Recently seen. So, tell me, Mr. Pierce, that is your surname. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, thanks.
You could. What would you change? If you could change your surname, what would you change it to?
World Eater? No. Now, what's that from? Fantastic Four?
Is it?
Yeah, Galactus, World Eater.
I'm just going to assume you're right.
Obviously, that's not my actual choice. I don't know.
Rickles? Buckles?
Hornswoggle? No. No. I don't know.
So I just threw that on you. I've no idea why. Right, so recently seen, I've only got one, so you've got two.
Yeah.
So if we have a recently seen sandwich, starting with your bread, my meat, and then we'll end again on your bread.
Well, mine is, I noticed in the last podcast you shoehorned something in without my consent.
Yeah. Did I? What?
You did an emergency Rogue One review.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and now I'm actually going to talk about Rogue One because I've seen it as well.
Oh, cool. I'm interested to hear your opinion.
Well, it differed from yours, actually.
Mm-hmm. A bit rude, mate.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
I did say I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
No, but I think the key difference is that I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed Force Awakens last year.
Say what?
I know.
Come in here with your wrong opinions. My house. Playing the piano loads better than I can. Jesus, who the fuck do you think you are? Okay, no. I'm interested to hear why.
I just thought that it was nice to have the freedom to do something that wasn't trying to fit in with, you know, all the other plot points that need to be explained or carried on. I enjoyed that very much. I thought it was nice to have something with, you know, which had a bit of a darker edge to it. I thought it was well paced, and I enjoyed the fact that the main protagonist was kind of, for the first half of the film, was just a bit sort of meh about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, they cut lines from the... Well, there were lines in the trailer that did not make the film. There's quite a lot in the trailer that didn't make the film. But the bit where she says, well, I don't know, let's stand and fight, or then I rebel, or stuff like that. She seemed a bit laissez-faire about the whole kind of thing, really, didn't she?
Mm. But I thought that was kind of fresh. I like that. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that it got me straight from the first scene, because I thought that... I don't know whether... I saw it and I thought, am I being obvious, or am I looking for something that isn't there? But to me, that opening scene of with Mads Mikkelsen stood in the field wearing the robes, and it was sort of in a green field with mountains in the background. The shot placement, and just little details like the fact of how he had his hair up, he looked exactly... It looked like a still from an Akira Kurosawa film to me. And I just thought that was such a nice nod to the fact that they were some of the, you know, big influences on George Lucas when he made the first film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I was just like, right, this film's on the right track for me.
And I'm guessing to Gareth Edwards as well. I mean, half the reason he took Godzilla is because he does have a real affection and affiliation with those sort of monster movies from Japan.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're almost certainly right there. And the way that Meitei comes in with his billowing cloak about and the stormtroopers, it's very reminiscent of Meitei from the original. Oh, fans will know what I mean. do the join up yourself.
Join the dots. Yeah. Well, speaking of Vader, I don't think, yeah, like you said, it's not really a spoiler to say.
No, everyone knows he's in it.
That scene right at the end where he's kicking ass was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
It was, yeah, it's so good. They got everything right, the pace of it, the lighting, the music kind of bubbling underneath it, had this sort of quiet intensity to it. Yeah. It helped hammer home, because I don't think some of the other films kind of underplay, actually, that Darth Vader is supposed to be, as he's presented in A New Hope, a terrifying character.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other films concentrate on his humanity, particularly like the prequels, really. Obviously, he's kind of a different character then, but I don't think they really sort of sold it quite as much. And that that was like back on track for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. And what was lacking for you then? I know you kind of covered
it
already.
The charm and the sort of buoyant, fizzy atmosphere of The Force Awakens.
Okay.
I really liked that it felt like a fun family adventure. And in fact, which is illustrated by the fact that my family do enjoy it, and I wouldn't show them Rogue One. And I know there is that precedent set by all the characters die at the end, which I don't think my children would be massively buoyed by. But I just felt that The Force Awakens had that real Saturday tea time, rip-roaring boys' own adventure, although in this case girls' own adventure time. I just don't think it had that. I think it felt not flat, but a little bit fatalistic, a little bit dour, and a tiny little bit too self-important. And I didn't like K2SO. And if he is the one thing that's going to lighten the atmosphere and the mood for you, if you don't get on with that one comedy character, there is virtually nothing else to lighten that misery of the action.
Okay.
And I didn't like him at all. I laughed a bit once.
Oh dear.
Yeah, what did you think of the robot? I know you said on the last one you weren't a big fan of robots anyway.
Yeah, so. Well, I'm obviously just on some sort of different plane than you are for this one, because, like you say, I'm normally completely ambivalent or actively dislike robot characters, but this one I thought was all right, I don't know what's going on, basically.
It just felt like a cheap Marvin the Paranoid Android knockoff to me. I will watch it again at some point. I'll almost certainly end on Blu-ray, even though my wife said, why would you do that? You didn't like it that much. Why would you buy a film you don't like that much? She does not understand the collector mentality in me. But, don't know, for now, no. I prefer Phantom Menace. Yeah, take that, the internet. I literally do. It's not a bad film in any stretch, but just not really for me. Soz. What else have you seen, Hall?
Do you want to do one?
I've not seen a great deal lately, even though it's been Christmas and the like. But just close its doors for possibly the last time, although we don't know, Sherlock. Series 4. Now, your hum then, or your agreement sounded pretty sour.
Well, I don't know what you're going to say.
Well, have you seen...
I'll take it that you didn't enjoy it.
No, I mean, I wasn't really back into the series anyway. I'd given up after he failed to solve a case, so just shot a man point blank in the face. That's not a detective, that's just a homicidal lunatic. That's rubbish for me. But anyway, I got sort of pulled back into it, the episode one, because my wife was watching anyway, so I sort of ended up watching it by proxy. I thought it was sort of quite enjoyable. But again, so self-indulgent, so contrived, and that last episode just shattered all boundaries, I think, of acceptable drama. It's ludicrous. It's no better than a Saw movie, and I do literally mean that, in the fact they're going room to room with these challenges, these torture scenes, and of course the ridiculous, the sort of knotted continuity of the plotting. It's absurd, and it's not fun, and it's not solving crime, and it's not solving mysteries. It really annoyed me. I thought it was tedious and self-indulgent bollocks. It's very pretty, it's very well made, and I don't take that away from anyone. It's very well acted. I like all the players in it. I just think it's just cobblers. It's just utter fucking cobblers. It's nothing else, right? It's nonsense. And it's a show so irredeemably in love with itself. It will not give the audience the satisfaction of a straightforward, fun adventure, even in one in which they can work out the clues themselves. It just annoyed me on that level. It worked as entertainment, but by God, it does not work as storytelling.
Interesting.
And I do hope they don't carry on, or if they do, they just do straightforward mysteries and crimes. Fucking hell.
That's interesting. I almost completely disagree with you. I found the first episode a little bit sort of tawdry, but the second and third episodes I really enjoyed.
Wow.
Both of them, yeah. I really enjoyed the one with Toby Jones. I thought he was a sort of oily character. I thought he was just below the point of overplaying it.
I liked him. He was very good.
And it doesn't really bother me, the fact that they're going off on a tangent from detective things. I just kind of take it for what they're presenting. And also, I mean, even like little bits, like you say, the fact that they don't sometimes don't actually bother solving things. They just have a kind of, you know, like a cop-out ending. Like, it really doesn't bother me as long as I've enjoyed the ride.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And that final episode, I thought, it made me very tense and I enjoyed that. I think it was just much more kind of exhilarating than I was expecting it to be. I thought all the acting in it was really good. I like the fact that they got straight to the point with it. You know, like within 20 minutes they were in that facility, then the rest of it kind of carried on. Whereas I think that, you know, in the past they might have just made that the sort of climax of it, rather than drawing it out. I loved the, I won't say for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, but there was a sort of guest spot for, I don't know, some comic relief in the middle of it, which I particularly enjoyed.
We're talking Moriarty, aren't
yeah.
we? Yeah, I'm busting it wide open. If you haven't seen it, fuck off.
Okay. He's so angry at it that he just doesn't care about anyone anymore. Right. Yeah, well, yeah, so... But it's nice to have different opinions.
Is it? Not in this new Trump world in which we now live.
Oh, no, don't get that.
I think that's possibly behind a lot of my fury right now. Yeah. Anyway, so Sherlock, if it comes back, fine. I don't think I'll be, you know, booking a seat on the couch to be there at the premiere.
Can we say?
Sauce.
You're not alone, though. I've heard more... Yeah, people disappointed with it.
That second episode, that was the closest I think it got to classic kind of shot. But even then, it had this ludicrous backstory. It's basically engineered his own plotting, or well, actually his friend's, well, Watson's widow. No, the other way around, isn't it?
She's
the dead one. I mean, oh god. But I did like all the, not even tried to hide the fact that this was Jimmy Savile, as played by Toby Jones. But yeah, well done them for going there.
The particularly unpleasant moment, kind of, in a way it stood out more than the actual sort of murder aspect of it, was where he was eating the cereal and he like regurgitated a little bit out of it into a cup and just looked straight at the woman and said, oh, it's more of that if you're interested. Like, what does that even mean? It's disgusting. Yeah.
Well, that brought to mind that recent footage of Jimmy Savile with Louis Theroux, which they hadn't shown the first time around, where he just gets changed in front of young researchers at the BBC.
Yeah.
Don't mind me, you know, I'm just taking off. Oh, God. Why do we have to get back to Savile all the time? All the time, Savile.
Don't sound like you're in a good place mentally.
I'm very tired. You know, every night we've been going to bed beyond midnight and getting up at 6. Yeah.
Okay.
That's Sherlock.
Right.
Go on.
Okay, and my other recently seen is The Neon Demon.
Hey! I'm interested. Come on.
I really enjoyed it.
Hey, of course you did. It's Nicolas Winding Refn.
Yeah, aside from, although, you know, it was obviously there for a reason, and it was meant to be, there is a particularly revolting scene about 2/3 of the way through the film.
Which bit is that?
The necrophilia scene.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, how can I forget that? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's female on male.
No, it's not. It's female on female.
Female on female. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Female on female. I'm slightly more forgiving. Why? That's dreadful.
That's an odd...
No more palatable. Revolting.
Yeah, it is revolting. Mm. That aside, and I don't know why I brought that up first, I thought I thought the rest of the film was magnificent. As you would have guessed that I would have thought of it.
Yeah.
It had all the stuff I like in it. It had flashing lights and, you know, nice camera tricks. And I love little things like... I love it when a film tells you what's going to happen, essentially, in the first shot. And that's what this film did. The first shot is of she's lying back and it looks like her throat's been cut. And it holds that tableau. And that is the film. And but still, your mind goes, oh, maybe it's going to end differently to that. I mean, not that it was all about... And I liked little touches like... I was talking about... I couldn't work out the symbolism of the triangles. You know, because they were used heavily in the poster. And throughout the film, they're obviously of importance. But I just could not work them out. They're obviously something to do with this demon thing. And the only thing that I was talking to someone about it, and they said that they looked up like the classical symbolism of triangles, and that it's a downward facing triangle supposedly represents the feminine, and an upward facing triangle represents the masculine, and it's that the masculine one is in the middle of three downward facing ones, and that the only thing that in the bathroom scene at the start, the three other models are saying, oh, you're so pretty, you've got masculine features. And that's they're the three that surround her.
Yeah.
Almost in perfect symmetry in that scene near the pool at the end. And it was sort of a reflection of that. So I don't know whether it was just a kind of foreshadowing thing or that. But yeah, loved that. Absolutely adored. There's a scene roughly in the middle of the film where there's two mirrors at a sort of upward facing angle, and it looks like she's kind of kissing her own face going from one side to the other. Absolutely spellbinding. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it for all those things, and yeah, I'm sure I will watch it again, although yeah, it might take me a little while before I can stomach that scene, but let's not dwell on that, because the movie was more than that. And also, really liked Keanu Reeves in it.
Wasn't he brilliant?
Yeah.
Yeah, astonishing. Not unrecognisable, but certainly in the character he played, he's not really gone to that sort of place before.
No. Because the thing with that character is they could have got a lot of people to do it.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the fact that it was him, like, it was just an interesting casting choice, and he did it really well.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I find with Nicholas Winding Refn, they are films I admire rather than love. But that's fine, as long as it evokes that kind of reaction from me.
Mm.
Apart from, I mean, Drive, I'm close to loving that. So
yeah.
Yeah, that was very, very good.
Okay, brilliant.
Cool. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I think that's
fine. Bang.
Yeah.
Cool, let's crack on then. It's the Danny Boyle quiz. Why is he the subject of your podcast? I'll get onto that later, you prick. Right, so, Kit, are you ready for a Danny Boyle quiz? No, you're not, because you're chewing a bounty. It's a good job you are, because no fucker's eating those.
I've noticed there's a lot of bounties left.
I really like bounties, but I don't really...
Just in case anyone thought our celebrations thing was a ruse earlier, there are genuinely a lot of celebrations left, and many of them appear to be bounties, so...
Yeah, a lot of bounties. There's a few Colley Street left, too.
I'm going to be a coconutty mess later.
Right. So it's a quiz.
Almost done.
That's fine. No, okay. You carry on, mate. Yeah, it's fine. We've got all the time in the world. It's fine.
Let me just wash it down with some
fucking hell.
That's better, yeah.
Right. There are five rounds of not exactly increasing difficulty, but just increasing annoyance, to be honest.
Just like being friends with you then.
Yay! Round one. Danny, Lance, Susan, 100 degrees Celsius, or and carbuncles. What kind of boil am I? Okay.
Well, okay.
That's Danny, Lance, Susan, 100 degrees Celsius, or and carbuncles.
Hang on, I don't know who Lance Boyle is.
You've clearly never played Mega Race from the early 90s on PC. It was one of those sort of futuristic driving games where a bit crossed with Road Rash, a bit like F-Zero, that kind of thing.
Is that a joke? Because you literally Lance a Boyle if it's a problem.
That's right, a joke.
Great. Okay, so the options are Danny,
Lance, Susan,
100
degrees Celsius.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
Boiling point. And carbuncles.
Boils and carbuncles. So that's the actual medical condition. Boils.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I can deal with that.
Good. Listen, there were more in this round, but my computer turned itself off, wiped all my things, so now there's only three.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. Right, one of round one. It shows there is no such word as can't. That is a quote from either Danny, Lance, Susan, 100 degrees Celsius, or and carbuncles. Which Boyle is that?
Danny.
Oh, it's not. It's Susan Boyle.
Because she won.
It shows there's no... No, she didn't actually win. Shows there's no such word as can't. Yeah, Susan, you're wrong. There is such a word. It's a hybrid word of can and not. There is a word as can't. You've literally just said it.
Yeah.
Twat. Right. Two. They are caused by the human papilloma virus, HPV, which can be passed on during sexual contact. Is that Danny, Lance, Susan, 100 degrees Celsius, or and carbuncles?
Ask and carbuncles.
Oh, you're very close. I'm going to give it to you anyway. It's actually genital warts. It was a red herring. Three. Hi, I'm Lance Boyle, and people often wonder if I'm real. Is that Danny, Lance, Susan, 100 degrees Celsius, or and carbuncles?
That's Lance, isn't it?
Lance Boyle, it is correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Well done. You got three of three. No, you didn't get two
of
three.
I got one.
No. Jesus. Round two. Danny Boyle, Fanny Oil. Danny Boyle's name rhymes with a revolting phrase.
Yeah. Where's the question?
Can you make out the revolting phrase that rhyme with these names? Okay, starting... Again, there was more of these, but the fucking computer wiped them. Number one, Nikki Hunt.
Sticky c***.
Mate, no, it's Tricky Stunt. What the hell?
Oh.
It's disgusting. Mate. Number two, Thor Venus.
Thor penis.
No, it's four wieners. What's funnier than four wieners? That's disgusting. Mate, it's a bit gross. Can you sort yourself out? Okay, Mary Bevis.
What? Hairy crevice?
No, it's scary novice. It's a pleasing half rhyme.
Oh, that's not fair.
There we are. Yeah. So, no, none. Cliff Stock.
Stiff cock.
No, it's not. It's not that at all. Okay, well, you got none on that round.
Oh.
Round three, the Tory MP and dickhead outburst shock round. Ex-Tory MP Aidan Birdley tweeted what during Danny Boyle's gobsmacking Olympics opening ceremony of 2012? A. This is balls. Where's the fox hunting and sexy birds in miniskirts?
Right.
Is it B. The most lefty opening I've ever seen. More than Beijing, the capital of a communist state. Thank God the athletes have arrived. Now we can move on from lefty multicultural crap. Bring back the Red Arrow, Shakespeare and the Stones. Or is it C. Davy Cameron is a pie.
Well, who is he again?
Ex-Tory MP for, I think it's like Cranach and Corley, or I don't know. Ex-Tory MP, Aidan Birley.
Well, I would have thought...
He's a bit of a c***.
Option A sounds like a bit too UKIP-y, mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with B because it's a bit more reserved.
It is B, you're absolutely right. Yes, well done. His idea of British culture is the Red Arrow, Shakespeare and the Stones.
Yeah.
The Stones who famously took, what, sort of Southern American black music and made it their own. Fuck you, Aidan Birley. I'm glad you haven't got a job anymore. Round four, guess the person. Okay, guess the letters from the clues I'm about to give you and you have to guess the person. Okay?
Okay.
So letter one. My first is in Slumdoggy, but not in Slumdog.
Okay.
What letter?
Why?
Letter two. My second is in 28 days later, but not in 30 days later.
28.
Just one of them.
20.
No.
8. What?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. No, just one of the digits.
2.
Right, what have you got so far?
Why two? Hang on, is it Chris Jericho?
It is Chris Jericho! I'm glad you guessed it there, because I didn't have a third one.
Oh, dear.
Chris Jericho is a famous wrestler for all our non-wrestling fans. Okay, and round five. Who wants to be a Slumdog millionaire?
Okay, hit me.
Right, so this is a genuine question from the film Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay.
And if you don't know the answer, you're a racist. The song Darshan Du Ghanshyam was written by which famous Indian poet? Is it A. Sirdas, B. Tulsidas, C. Mirabai, or D. Kabir?
Kabir.
Kabir, it's Sirdas,
Bollocks.
There we are. You got about naught out of five. Sorry.
About naught? It wasn't.
You barely got anything right there.
I got the Tory one right.
Oh, big shit.
You did this quiz. You only got one right. You might as well have got none. I didn't like that quiz.
I'm sorry to hear. Chip me up. Danny Boyle. Danny Boyle there. Oh, Danny Boyle. Do you know, I don't know how that song goes, do you?
Well, Danny Boy?
Yeah, because I'm not Irish or Scouts or whatever.
Like, oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling.
But what, I never, because when I hear people singing it, I'm like, they're often a bit drunk, and it sort of slurs all over the place. It's got very long, elongated vowels. Oh, Danny Boy. I'm like, I can't make out a discerning melody.
They're either drunk or someone's died.
Is that why they sing it? Who's Danny Boy?
I don't know.
Oh.
Have you seen Miller's Crossing?
No.
There was a brilliant scene in that, which is set to the music, Danny Boy.
All right. Could you play it on the piano? I don't mean will you do it now, but could you?
I've got the music for it.
Oh. Why?
It's in the collection.
Of what?
Of easy piano tunes.
Okay. Are you going to eat another? Okay, right. So Danny Boyle, anyway. After that diversion. Why are we doing... ask me why through a mouthful of fucking coconut-flavoured chocolate.
Why are we doing Danny Boyle?
Well, I'll tell you. Most obviously, because Trainspotting 2 is imminent.
Yes.
But also, I think because of that, it's a good time to take stock of one of the current greats in the directing world. And I do mean that. He's someone who has become one of my favourite directors simply by suddenly realising, hey, I really like and or love most of your work. He's a master of fizzy, kinetic, cinematic storytelling, I think, that puts pace as importantly as heart, of which I think, you know, his films have an awful lot. His actors aren't afraid to make themselves look, you know, terrible with Boyle's multitude of camera angles that often get, you know, right in the grill of his players. He frequently employs, you know, split screen and flashbacks. It never fails to tell a story first and foremostly, sort of visually. I think it's incredibly important. His constant collaborator is Anthony Dodd Mantle, his cinematographer on, I think, 28 Days Later, Slumdog Millionaire, and many others, 127 Hours. I think his soundtracks, obviously so synonymous with that sort of 90s Tarantino-led habit of, you know, either rediscovering or repurposing lost classics or contemporary tracks, you know, to buoy a scene or a mood. I think they are utterly vital to enjoying a Boyle film. If you think of like Shallow Graves, Andy Williams' sort of ironic use of that song at the end of that film, or 28 Days Later, In a House in a Heartbeat, or A.R. Rahman's uplifting score from Slumdog, or, you know, all of Trainspotting. Those marriages of sound and vision sort of distill at once the sort of thrilling and often heart-jolting sugar rush of, you know, filmic, you know, triumph. His characters are often selfish or hedonistic or quite often both, yet I think Boyle always pulls off, I think Boyle always sort of pulls you in regardless, and sort of wins the audience over masterfully. You're laughing at pulling off, aren't you?
I'm laughing at you laughing at pulling off.
But I just think he makes films that tell stories just so clearly and so precisely with great pace and with great heart, regardless of the fact that most of his characters, if you look at them, are bastards. What a great filmmaker. And I look very much forward to Trainspotting 2, because Trainspotting was pretty much one of the most iconic and most zeitgeisty films of, you know, my time.
Mm.
I was, 17 when it came out, and it had a huge cultural impact around pop culture at that time.
It's brilliant. It's the alternative 90s film, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's your favourite and why?
My favourite Danny Boyle film is 127 Hours.
Hey! Okay, that's the only one I've only just seen because I hadn't seen it, so I had to watch it.
Oh, really?
In prep for this, yeah. Well, why is that? That's interesting.
I like it because it's short, but in a short amount of time, it manages to make it seem like a lot of time has passed, because it puts you right, you know, it gets straight to the point. He's caught up in that situation very early on.
Yeah, 15 to 20 minutes or
so. Yeah, and, you know, much like I was talking about earlier, I thought it was maybe going to happen at like the halfway point of the film or something like that, but no, straight in there, and it's only, what is there, maybe 5 minutes worth of footage after he escapes from it, something like that, five or ten minutes.
That, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the photography is great in all of his films, but some of the shots in that are just brilliant. That sense of claustrophobia is so well realised. The flashback scenes, I think, are really effective in breaking it up.
Yeah.
I just feel so invested in the character.
Mm.
And I think he kind of achieves his aim. And, you know, I know a lot of the talking point of that film was, you know, the arm incident.
Jesus, the nerve, the literal nerve shattering or nerve snipping arm sequence.
Yeah, but I think it needed that. It mm-hmm. needed that exclamation mark. To, mm. well, that's the wrong term to use, but it needed some sort of visceral point to it. But yeah, the build up to that and the sense of relief post as well.
Yeah.
And also I love the shot of the actual guy right at the end of the film, like.
Yeah.
Just because sometimes I think that when they use actual footage at the end, I find it a bit overly sentimental, but in this case it worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, yeah, in the music used, it particularly in some of the flashback scenes, is fantastic. Yeah, it makes him sort of, it really, when he's dwelling on what he really thinks is important in his life, just think it's a very well realised film.
Yeah, but yeah, that's a great example of him, I think, well, Boyle, should I say, telling a story visually and, you know, filling in all that illustrative detail with those flashbacks and things like that. Because it could very easily, if you mean, bit of a self-indulgent sort of chamber piece with just him in the rock and just him acting for, you know, 90 minutes or whatever, which I think would have got fairly tiresome. But I think would have looked good on a showreel for, you know, the Oscars. Like, what's the actor called again? James Franco.
Yeah,
but James Franco just sort of, I was going to say chewing the scenery or his arm, but that's not quite right. But it could have been that very much easier. But no, I think Boyle tells the story just magnificently. I think just the editing alone in that film is terrific. And then that incredible shot, which I'm sure isn't the focal point of it, but when it goes up from his face looking up and then the crane goes all the way up through the canyons, all the way, and then across to the valleys and the Utah deserts, and you see just how far that guy has to go to get anywhere. It's brilliant stuff. Yeah, I really liked 127 Hours. The arm scene did make me feel physically sick.
Yeah.
And it was because I was so invested in the character by that point. It wasn't just... because I've seen all the Saw movies and people cut their own arms off in there in more, you know, lurid detail, but you don't care as much.
It's different, isn't it, given the context. But it's, and also, you know, the fact that you know this is... real. Everyone knows it's real. Yeah. Weird trivia detail. I know the person that synchronised the audio to the visual of that arm scene.
Seriously?
Yeah, because his sister worked for the production company that was editing it.
Right.
And she was supposed to do that job.
Right.
And she couldn't because she felt physically sick doing it. And he's like, oh, I'll do it for you.
That's amazing. Cool.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
I think by that connection, you should be listed in the credits.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit tenuous, doesn't it?
Sorry, guys.
Like it. So my favourite, as I've just probably hinted at, and I don't think necessarily his best film, but it is certainly my favourite because it is, as I said, the cultural touchstone of my generation, Trainspotting. Because it just is. It's terrific. And it's funny enough, it's one of the Boyle films that doesn't make me feel as passionate and as emotionally invested as perhaps other films, like 127 Hours, when, I mean, I cry quite a lot of films anyway, but I was pretty teary at the end of that one. And even Steve Jobs, which I don't think is his best work, but nonetheless, I still felt incredibly emotionally engaged by the last shot of that film. But Trainspotting, I don't really get that, but it's just such an adrenalised sugar rush, and it's just brilliant. That's all I can say about it. It's a brilliant, fantastic film, and a very difficult book to adapt if you ever read the source material, which is essentially a bunch of different chapters from seemingly different novels hoisted together. And even the film doesn't actually make it clear why the film's called Trainspotting in the novel. If you've not read it, it's because I think it's Renton, or is it Begbie, one of the two, sees their dad at Leith Central Station, who is undeniably an alcoholic, and laughs about them train spotting at Leith Central Station. That's where it got its seemingly arbitrary title from. But I just think the film does such a good job of filleting all the bits of that thing and putting it together in such an urgent and vital sort of feeling film. Just great stuff.
It's, I remember the first time I watched it, because I'm just younger enough than you that I would have been too young to watch it, really. Yeah. And so, but because it became, it instantly became so iconic, I'd seen so many of these scenes before I watched it as a whole.
Yeah.
And it still, it didn't dilute it at all. It was still so powerful. I mean, I know it's endlessly talked about the scene where he dives into the toilet bowl, but it is brilliant. And it's so, if you don't, especially, I was trying to, because I kind of knew it was coming, I was trying to imagine if I hadn't known, it's sort of, you know, where does that come from? And yeah, the other, you know, the baby on the ceiling as well. It's just, it really does make your skin crawl.
Yeah.
And the other bit that stood out for me was the where the Lou Reed Perfect Day's playing and they dump the guy in the middle of the street.
Yes.
It's just so heartbreaking. Mm. Yeah. No, yeah, you can't argue with that. It's a brilliant film.
And it's so good to see what different audiences get out of it. I saw it twice theatrically when it first came out. Once in Ilfracombe in North Devon, where drug use was fairly high. Don't know if it still is. I don't want to tar Ilfracombe with that brush. But I remember a lot of people finding the dark humour in it very, very funny. It got a real riotous response, especially when there's a very quick scene where, you know, three smackheads just walk into an old people's home, wheel out the telly, which is very, very funny. However, I watched it a few weeks later, I think it was in York, at like an art house cinema. And with, obviously, I don't want to say a more learned or appreciative audience, but just with a very, very different sort of more academic audience. And again, I found that very funny. Literally no one else laughed. And this must have been the first time they were seeing this film. Why did no one find that funny? That was brilliant. That got the best response, that scene in Ilfracombe.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So anyway, Trainspotting for me, but it's not just about us two, is it? It's not about me, it's not about you.
Well, it is.
It is, pretty much, yeah. We could just choose not to read any of these.
Yeah.
But we got responses from the listeners. Okay.
You want to go first?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, James Gent says, A Life Less Ordinary, Diaz and McGregor in their youthful prime, a carefree 90s classic.
Hmm, carefree, good word for it. Not a massive fan of that one, I must say.
Oh, really?
Hmm, just... don't know, it felt a bit too cloying to the time in which it was made. I think that's got a lot to do with Ewan McGregor's haircut, but apart from that, it did feel a bit Kevin Smith. It felt a bit, and I like Kevin Smith, but I mean, by the time you get to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, you're like, ooh, really, mate? It did feel a bit like that. I know it's a road movie. I don't know. It's fine. Again, I don't dislike any of his work, but if I had to choose one, certs not that. Oh, Barnaby Sultan says Masonic Mysteries. I think this goes back to the fact that Danny Boyle directed some...
Is this the Morse episode?
Morse stuff. It must have been, yeah. I haven't seen any of his TV work, so soz.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I can only assume that because the response to that is someone saying, it's the Bloody Masons, Lewis. But yeah, that, yeah. As has been established in this podcast, we don't actually know anything, so we might be Okay. Rob Stradling says Sunshine because I've seen it.
Go on.
I really like Sunshine.
I too like it. Yeah. I think it is better than the Doctor Who episode 42, which are very similar.
So. Yeah, well, Doctor Who does rip off a lot of currently existing stuff.
In all fairness, I think they came out at much the same time.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they both got like spaceships called, is it Icarus? And they're both about sort of, not Doctor Who's about mining the sun, this is about kickstarting the sun.
Yeah.
But they're still very, you know, they're close to it, it turns them mad, blah, 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 burning.
I thought it was great. And a lot of people are saying, oh, it's far-fetched. Because they, you know, they jump from one spaceship to the other and the guy's on fire and somehow still alive. That didn't bother me at all.
No, me neither. Yeah. It's science fiction. I can put up with it.
Yeah.
Lindsay Southern also says Sunshine. Mind-bending brilliance and a great score.
Great. Colin Hicks says Trainspotting.
Alright. Mike Kenwood also concurs Trainspotting. It just roars along and doesn't give a fuck. I like that. They should put that on the poster.
That sums it up brilliantly, actually.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
John Arnold says, fuck films, the best thing he ever did was the 2012 Olympics opening ceremony. Actually patriotic without being jingoistic, populist without being patronising, and a clear, great big fuck you to the government of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it was tremendous, and I had no plans to watch it, really. And I watched that on an iPhone in a Bath hotel room. on my 10th wedding anniversary. Not in the evening. It was in the morning. In the morning.
Oh, dear.
In bed with my wife at the time. We both watched it. And yeah, it got me all teary. I thought it was beautiful. Just the stuff of the nurses and all that. I mean, Aidan Burley wasn't a fan, but who the fuck is he?
John adds, aside from that, Mike's right, Trainspotting captures what it was like to be young in the 90s. Relentlessly energetic.
Yeah, what, Hooked on Smack?
Oh, do you remember the Smack days?
Oh, I used to love injecting all that shit into my veins.
Yeah.
Paul Kirkley says he did a great episode of Inspector Morse where Morse and Lewis went to a rave. True story. Okay.
Dean Hercombe says, 28 days later, he took what had become a tired, cliched and hackneyed genre and injected it with genuine fear, panic, desperate isolation and a realism that hadn't been seen before. If Romero is the king of the post-zombie apocalyptic world, Boyle is his crown prince. Simply incredible filmmaking. I'm so proud of myself for not using the line, Boyle breathed life back into zombies. Ah, bollocks.
Thank you very much, Dean. I really, really, really like Dean. I really like 28 Days Later, which I have seen a multitude of times. I do find it a massive stretch that the army deprived of people or women for, 28 days would suddenly turn into violent rapists. But hey, I'll go along with it if that's what I have to accept to enjoy the film. Oliver Rolls says, Trainspotting, Shallow Grave, Olympics, 28 Days Later. Come on. All amazing, can't wait for T2. Life Less Ordinary was alright, Slumdog was overrated, I liked Sunshine, but Alien, Love, Triangle and Millions were shite. Whoa! Must say though, he's quite amusing on Twitter, so I can forgive the last couple in my list. Alien, Love, Triangle, I have not seen. Millions, he's really cute. I've only seen it once, and it's quite sweet. It's almost entirely forgettable.
Yeah.
But it's really heartfelt.
I've not seen either of those, unfortunately.
No. Alien Love Triangle, I believe, is a TV film. I have not seen it.
Oh, right, okay. Ryan Hamer says, 28 Days Later, as it's the only film I've seen with him in it.
Let's just move on. Ian Robinson says, my friend did a location scout with him once and went via a shop that had a giant pair of scissors just so he could point out a knife less ordinary. Is that true?
Ian Churchill says, London Olympics.
Boomed it. Charmaine Lovett says, I'm going to go slightly off piste here. So I just want to do that thing, you know, like Euro. Did you ever watch Eurotrash back in the 90s?
Yeah, yeah.
And they would make people sound like cretins, redoing their voices in silly northern accents and our ethics.
Are you going to do the whole thing?
Yeah, I am. Charmaine Lovett says, I'm going to go slightly off piste here. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Trainspotting, 28 Days Later, The Beach, and actually really enjoyed Trance too. But what I adore was his direction of Frankenstein for National Theatre. I can't carry on with this voice. A visual delight that was supported by two very strong leads in Benedict Cumberbund and Johnny Lee Miller. I think she probably did mean Benedict, but that's autocorrect, isn't it?
No, she's just trying to be funny and succeeding, I think.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, doing a joke, because that's a new joke at the moment, isn't it?
You call him like... Crumple
Benedict,
stink,
Benedict
fuck it, fuck
Cucumber it. Sasquatch or something like that. Yeah,
okay. A visual delight that was supported by two very strong leads in Benedict Cumberbund and Johnny Lee Miller. To allow them to switch roles and alternating performances for the live screenings was ingenious. That's a very hard story to portray well in live theatre, and he achieved it well above expectation. I didn't know they did that with the whole switching roles thing.
No.
That reminds me of that Webb and Mitchell sketch where they would do Sherlock and Watson alternative lines as each character.
No, okay, right. Fine.
Well, there we are. I never saw Frankenstein, as I call it. So I can't comment.
Mary Thomas says, Shallow Grave.
I rewatched that ahead of this. They're all I mean, everyone in that is a I mean...
They're not very nice.
No, they're not.
They kill someone.
Yeah, well, probably before that, I forgot how they were. Yeah. It's the sort of thing I let slip when I'm younger because you're young and a teenager and a dick, but
it forces you to see Keith Allen's penis.
Oh, that was a bonus. Did you see his cock?
Yeah.
I must have wiped that from a...
When they find him lying on the bed.
Is he naked?
Yeah, he's got no clothes. It's not explained why.
Okay. Michael Morgan says, Trainspotting. Without doubt, though Slumdog Millionaire was very cleverly done and a good film too.
How do you feel about Slumdog?
I really like it. I think it's pretty implausible, but I really like it.
Okay.
Do you not?
I thought it was strong, but it wasn't my favourite.
No.
Yeah.
But that's the one that's got the Oscar.
Yeah.
I really like Dev Patel. I think he's a great lead, and he was very good in the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah,
which is fantastic.
Okay. I love the ending of Slumdog, when they did the dance at the train station.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. Yeah. That's, again, another bit of fantastic marriage of... and
yeah.
That being sound and vision. I just like the whole... if you can't see, I'm doing the whole fusion fingers.
Yeah. Ian Lambert says... Butler. Ian Lambert...
And Butler.
...says... He's done... You can edit that. Have fun with that one. He's done so many great movies, so I'm just going to go for when I went to the Phoenix on a whim to see Shallow Grave. Blimey Charlie, that knocked me for six. Had no idea what to expect. From left field to Andy Williams, it's note perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Martin Brown says Slumdog Millionaire. Heartwarming. Heart-wrenching. Heartwarming. In that order.
Oh. Cameron Carter. What a name. Cameron Carter.
Doesn't want you to...
What?
Pick apart critically his name? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that a review? Are you reviewing names now?
Maybe we should just leave that.
I like it.
It's just a strong name, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, oh, it's actually a strong name. Okay, right, yeah. It is. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Cameron Carter says, Sunshine for the cinematography and the soundtrack. Admittedly now, thoroughly overused in adverts and other films.
Okay, Russell Parker says, the version of Ian Banks' Complicity that he made with the cast of Shallow Grave that sadly only exists in my mind. Caused by me seeing and reading those two around the same time. Or more sensibly, Trainspotting. Only film I've seen twice at the cinema since the original Star Wars back in 77. Landmark, seminal, etc.
Cryptic, but interesting.
Mm. But I don't think you can have...
Fake films.
No.
No.
The word I'm thinking, hypothetical, that's it. He's had a hypothetical film choice. Right. Would you like to know what Paul C. Lamprey says?
Yes.
Good, well, I'm about to tell you. Enjoyed Sunshine and Slumdog more than I thought it would, but I have to go with 28 Days Later. It was a welcome boost to the zombie movie genre. Okay, technically Rage Virus, but the essence was there, and the buggers were running rather than meandering along, making it certainly more intense. Interesting fact, read the DVD release of 28 Days. One of the extras is an account from experts discussing the fact that it's not a case of if sunlight will happen, but when. At that precise moment, the footage shown was an aerial shot of my hometown of Ilfracombe, complete with Landmark Theatre. Now we know where it'll start.
That's interesting.
I did not know that.
No, I didn't. Mm. Yeah. Sina Kadesh says, I liked the Olympic thing, apart from the bit where everyone applauded the guy who gave away the internet to the world. I think he should have just kept it to himself.
Thank you, Sina. Okay, on Twitter then, at NotSpecialPod, David Knight says, it's still Shallow Grave at the moment. Ooh, at the moment, suggesting it might change.
Mm.
Uh-huh. T.M. Jordan, at Knowing Knows, says, not a favourite, but do make sure Millions get some loving. Fun little film, that. It is a fun little film. Not much more than that, to be honest, but it is a fun little film. Dan Harvey, at Dan Harv, says, I personally loved Sunshine, that score. And he's done a little face with, like, love heart eyes. I don't know what happens. Mm. That's about. And also, Scott Edwards at Time Lord TSE says, favourite Danny Boyle film is a tough one for me. He graduated from my own alma mater, University of Wales, Bangor, and come to speak to us all. I remember thinking, wow, maybe my film degree isn't a total waste of time after all. P.S. It was. I don't do anything to do with film. One of my favourite pieces of cinema, never mind Boyle films, is Shallow Grave. The quirkiness of cam angles, the despicable nature of the three housemates. See, I said they were Chris Eccleston on top form. He does a Scottish accent in it.
Mm.
All make for a wonderful piece. I adore the beach, ruined only by the weird drug-infused video game hallucination scene. I really like that bit. We're going along to that remix of Blur's On Your Own. Anyway.
I thought that was great. I was surprised no one had mentioned the beach up to this point, actually.
No. Well, again, though, they are all self-indulgent pricks, but I suppose that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole point of the film,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. There are quite a few changes from the Gala novel, but I didn't mind it. The location is stunning and DiCaprio is magnificent. Trainspotting is, of course, wonderful. The beautiful underwater shot as he climbs the shit-encrusted toilet of a social club to appear swimming in crystal water is gorgeous, and the soundtrack is insanely good. I adore Slumdog too, but my favourite has to be 28 Days Later, at least definitely the first half. The barren shots of London, the creepy use of shadow and light, the rats in the tunnel, the tragic shot of Brendan Gleeson as the infected drop falls. That's really heartbreaking, isn't it?
Oh, I hate that bit.
Yeah,
it's oh, but then again, bollocks. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, yeah.
It's, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's all just beautiful. Sadly, it loses its sense of urgency a little in the second half once they reach the army barracks. But there are some beautiful moments of comedy and horror there too.
Oh, I don't agree with that. I thought once they got to the army barracks, it completely, because you've feel that that's the point where they're going to become safe.
Yes, and they get, it turns far into worse.
Yeah.
I like that too. Always put. Oh yeah, I sent him a copy of 127 Hours. Did you know? It's back when I was getting all the Boyle films on DVD,
yeah,
not Blu-ray, and I bought two 127 Hours by my mistake, and I just put out a tweet saying, "Does anyone want this?"
Right.
And he sent, so I sent it to him, and he wasn't overly impressed by it. And he hated Steve Jobs, found it pandering crap, verging on sycophantic. He did a pretty awesome job on the opening ceremony for the 2012 Olympics, though. And that's it. Whew. Right, there we are. Steve Jobs is a very... Have you seen Steve Jobs?
I have not.
Okay, it's a very interesting film. I love Michael Fassbender in pretty much everything. By the way, we watched Frank again last weekend. We had a friend come round and they wanted to watch something. And I think someone suggested Ghostbusters, the new one. I thought, well, I've only just seen it again the last week, so... Possibly, let's put Frank on. You should love it, and she did, and I love it. It's better the second time. It's so much funnier. I can relax knowing what happens in it. That's not a spoiler, I hope. And again, the ending just makes me tear up. So good. Such a great film. Anyway, Steve Jobs. Fassbender is terrific, as you'd expect, but I do think the film's kind of a bit too on the nose. Some of the dialogue is just so... I mean, they're basically trying to compare his attitude to his business to his... Well, I suppose... His business is an extension of himself, and the way he marketed things, the way he saw things, he had that sort of impersonal nature. At least this is what the film is telling me. I don't know what the man was like for real. And just, it does seem a little bit, the contrivances are a little bit too, they slot into place far too easily. I think was it originally a play? Am I right? It's in three very distinct parts.
Oh, right. I don't know that, but...
It's three, like, keynotes, presentations from his life. It's got the Apple Mac, is it? And then the black box thing I've never heard of, and then the Apple Mac again. Or the Macintosh. It's the Macintosh first, isn't it?
Right, whatever. Course.
Yeah, I don't think it was entirely successful in that. I think, again, everyone's very good. Fassbender and Winslet and Seth Rogen is fantastic in that. But, yeah, as I said, a little bit too on the nose, a little bit too obvious and knowing, and the whole daughter relationship thing seemed hugely contrived for the purpose of the film, which is fine because it is a film and it has to tell a narrative. But by God, they got me at the end.
Mm.
But yeah, not his best.
Okay.
And Trance is silly, but fun. Have you seen Trance?
No.
I really like Trance. And not just because you see Rosario Dawson's...
I didn't... Well, I wasn't aware of that.
So, we've just totted up, by the way, if anyone's interested... Is this even interesting? Am I even interested in what we're talking about?
Yeah, just say it.
Okay,
yeah.
The two most popular. It's a tie between the two most popular of our listeners. It's Trainspotting and...
Sunshine,
there we are, yeah. Close following up Shadowgrave and 28 Days.
I thought it was going to be Trainspotting. It's so iconic, and I've heard more mixed responses to Sunshine, whereas the responses to Trainspotting are almost always...
Yeah, I don't know anyone who hates it.
Yeah. I'm glad that Shadowgrave's getting some... love, because that kind of gets overlooked a little bit, I think, sometimes.
It does. I mean, as I said, I watched it the other day, and I wasn't as enamoured with it the first time, but then the first time, I literally knew nothing about it. And I have pretty much watched all both forms, more or less, in chronological order, starting with that one. Yeah, it did blow me away when I was a kid. Well, a kid, I was 16, I was a kid. Anyway, that's that. So, Danny Boyle, I'm very much looking forward to Trainspotting 2, because I think it's going to actually tackle properly, and it must do this, is they're ageing, or they have aged. They are 20 years older. It would be ridiculous if they just suddenly fit back into their old personas and act as if nothing's happened.
I've heard it's supposedly based on the book
Porno.
Porno, yeah. I haven't read Porno. No. I didn't hear great things, so I couldn't be bothered. I was kind of Irvin Welshed out by then. I've read like 4 of his books, and it's just... There's only so much I can take. Have you read much of his stuff?
I attempted to start, but the way it's written in that dialogue is so...
Yeah, phonetic Scottish.
Yeah, I couldn't get into. But I might have another go at some point. But
like Nadsat, but for the north of the border.
I'm assuming that it's something that, you know, once you get into it, it becomes easier.
Yeah, and it then in the fucking accent. That is terrible. I'm not... edit it out. Anyway, that's Danny Boyle. That's the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, by all means, please do. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and we're probably on email as well, notthespecialedition@gmail.com. Why not you send us an email rather than those porn bots that keep doing it? Well, they keep me busy. I'm alone winter's night.
And that's the end of the podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, Danny. Stiff cock. Stiff cock. Cock. Stiff cock. Stiff cock.